From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 25th day of March, 2025. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Naomi Bloom. She's at TotalFarmMarketing.com out of West Bend, Wisconsin. And then we'll turn our attention to the agricultural energies. We'll discuss those with Dan O'Brien. He's at Kansas State University Extension in the far western part of the state in Colby. But today, he'll come to us from Manhattan. That's the home of the Land Grant University there in Kansas. And then we'll turn our attention to the weather forecast, too. Don Day will join us from Cheyenne, Wyoming. And we'll take up not the forecast, immediate, that is, but the long-term forecast for the western part of the Corn Belt. I think you'll find it of interest. He has some different thoughts on what might happen in that part of the world this summer, and we'll do all of that right here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world online, on demand, anytime you'd like to listen to us at WILLAG.org, where we're celebrating 40 years of this program, some 10,000 episodes, and more than 30,000 interviews.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
May corn for the day settled at $4.57¾, down 6¾. December at $4.49, 2½ lower. May beans at $10.03¼, down 5½ a bushel. And November at $10.06½, unchanged. Bean meal, $2.50 lower. The bean oil up 15 cents. Soft red winter wheat in the July at $5.59¾, down 5½. And the hard red harvest month at $5.84¾, down 8¼ cents. Live cattle futures up 17½ cents. The feeder's 72½ lower, and lean hogs up 45 for the day. Naomi Bloom now joins us from TotalFarmMarketing.com. She's in West Bend, Wisconsin. Hi, Naomi. Good Tuesday to you. Thanks for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me.
Let's start with next Monday's USDA report. This prospective plantings numbers are due out, as well as the grain stocks figures. Some of the pre-report estimates are out. You've had a chance to take a quick look at them. What do you think, and what are your expectations?
Well, I would say like the whole industry has a pretty good feeling in general that we're going to be planting more corn acres this spring and less bean acres. I mean, that hasn't been a secret at all. But what was interesting is that with these pre-report estimates, officially on paper, we are looking at a bigger number than the USDA Outlook Forum for corn acres. So if you remember last year, we planted 90.6 million acres. That Outlook Forum was looking for an additional 3 million more acres of corn, and now on paper we're closer to 4 million more acres to be planted in the spring. And so that number for the average guess, 94.4, with a pretty dynamic range of estimates, anywhere from 92.5 to 96.6, we're going to see volatile markets on Monday, that's for sure, depending on where these numbers come out. And with the bean number coming in lower yet, I think even than what I was anticipating, we had last year planted 87.1 million acres. And we knew it would be a smaller number, but now we're looking more like 83.8 is the average estimate going into the report for Monday. So there's could be a room for a lot of surprises, I think, on the report. The quarterly stocks and planted acres report every year almost is a shock to the system in some capacity, either between a surprise number on the quarterly stocks report or a surprise on the planted acres side. I expect two-sided volatile trade, and then hopefully by the end of the day, we'll have a better sense of next price direction, because when you stop and look at how the corn and soybean market ultimately have just been trading in a three-week sideways quiet lull, there's a big breakout move coming, and it hinges on Monday's report.
Well, I do have a question about that, because if I remember correctly, the corn-soybean split generally adds up to about 180 million acres. And it's rare that they're 90-90, but once in a while that does take place. However, the trade has 5 million acres missing. USDA this time around has 2 million acres missing in total. So where do you think the rest of those acres are headed? Did they go to, well, are they going to spring wheat? Are they going to sorghum, cotton? What other places might they be? And what do you think of those missing figures?
Yeah, that is a good question and something that we're all eager to see on Monday. You know, when I talk to clients up in the Dakotas, I mean, even again today, I heard people say more corn, less soybeans. And I asked, you know, what about spring wheat? What about oats? You know, what about barley? What's happening there? And they kind of say, and then they just want to talk about corn. So I think that's an interesting point. I'm not quite sure what's going to be all where and when everything is said and done. And that's part of the surprise. I think that's going to be there for Monday. But the deep down of the actual acres, that's definitely in question.
We will watch that and see how it turns out. The grain stocks report also due out at 11 a.m. on Monday next week from USDA. This is the second quarter. We'll be halfway through the marketing year. It can be a bit of a wonky report. What do you think of the numbers there?
Well, I'm really bullish on old crop corn. I think the USDA needs to be quite a bit more forthright in how strong the export demand has been and has held in there, especially with our export inspections. We are shipping this corn out of the country. Also, ethanol demand still strong. So I feel like because on the February WASDE, on the March WASDE, they made no changes for corn, the come to Jesus has to happen on Monday. And I think we're going to see a friendly number for quarterly stocks of corn. Now, how friendly, that'll be having to manage with the acres part of it. So it might be a clash where old crop becomes suddenly bullish. New crop could be moderately bearish. So we'll keep an eye on that. And looking at the soybean number, I hadn't really heard too much what we were expecting to see. But with these pre-report estimates, we're looking at 1.9 billion bushels for soybeans. And so that is a little bit higher than the same time last year. And a lot of confusion there as far as, you know, going forward, where export demand is going to be, a lot of that shifting around trade and tariffs. And then the wheat number, they're saying quarterly stocks may be a little bit larger. And I'm not quite so sure about that. I think our wheat exports have been pretty darn okay. So we'll see how that wheat number comes out. But it always seems like the USDA, they'll have one commodity that's bullish on a report, one that's bearish and one that's neutral. And it's been working for them for the past little while from the standpoint it keeps everybody guessing, and then we have to go and trade weather in the future, also the trade and tariff news. But I think that this report might be truly, truly, truly the next big cornerstone for second quarter, and it's going to set the stage for prices not only second quarter, but into third quarter as well.
We'll see how all those numbers play out next Monday at 11 o'clock Central Time. They'll be up on our website at willag.org. Any final thoughts before I let you go?
Well, I would say just again, next week is really probably going to be quite volatile for grain prices, not only because of the report coming out Monday, but then we're on round three of trade and tariff issues just a couple days afterwards, and the start of a new quarter. So sometimes that can, we can see maneuvering of managed money, fund money through that time space. So next week, it's going to be volatile. Just be ready for anything, thinking about strategies in place, just in case we do get this behemoth corn number, how that might weigh on corn prices. So be ready for that, but also on the chance that they give us this friendly quarterly stocks report number and maybe a neutral corn acre number, things could really start to climb higher because we are looking at, you know, the tightest global corn carryout in about 8 years. Brazil's got tightest ending stocks in about 20-some years. So there's a lot of scenarios that can play out. The report on Monday is going to just really set that next cornerstone, and just be ready for anything and how the market wants to respond.
Thank you much.
Thank you.
That's Naomi Bloom. She is with TotalFarmMarketing.com. Let's check in on the agricultural energies as we do once a month with Dan O'Brien at Kansas State University. Hi, Dan. Thanks for being with us. I take it you're in Manhattan on campus today.
Yes, trying to help out academically with some of the grain and livestock marketing classes. So, yep, and interesting groups that, you know, as you deal with young people that are juniors and seniors and looking out to their career and where they might go. It's always interesting to find out if they're going back to the farm or to agribusiness or some to advisory groups. And I guess this was another group that had a variety of outcomes. A lot of them are still going back to the farm, and that's encouraging to see.
Oh, I'm surprised by that. How many out of the class and what size do you think are going back to the farm?
I think 10 to 15 out of a class of 33, 34 were going back in this particular class. I think the livestock industry with some of the relative profitability we've seen of late probably helps that some. Some are going back to the farm. They may go part-time as well. And again, working with cooperatives, there's one or two people that are going into the milling industry. So we had to be sure to talk about wheat and market opportunities or lack thereof for that. So that was all in play, I guess.
And I suppose, and I don't know that this is the case, but I think it's generally the case, coming out of college, most would tell you, go ahead and get a job on and off the farm, both if you can, particularly if you're going back to on-farm, so that you have just that experience.
Yeah, you know, and of course, that we could get in here. We're talking markets, but you're getting into issues of health insurance and surety of income and working your way into the farming operation and making sure that personalities and managerial styles are all compatible. And as we well know, and I don't think probably Illinois or Kansas farms differ that much in that some of the ideas of different generations may vary on what's the best way to approach managing a farm.
Okay, so what were you teaching them today? What was your class about?
We were talking about grain markets. This is a class that has the opportunity to, at least on paper, on paper to do some investment in different commodities. So they were interested in soybeans, of course, corn. Not much interest in the wheat markets, but what really was eye-opening was to then pull up charts of different commodities and just see how volatile things have been in both the short run and the long run. And so I guess we tried to bring the message to them that, hey, it's a volatile neighborhood that you're going into, and that it would be good to be aware of not just the futures prices, but also basis, because, you know, there'd be a good number of these folks that if they go into a co-op or whatever business, they'll be hedging away some of that futures risk and managing the basis instead. So that was thought provoking for them.
On that note, basis will be an important part of the agricultural energies in any ethanol plant. How are plants performing this month?
Well, the last numbers that I had seen on that actually had shown that the price of ethanol, the price of corn at ethanol plants is one barometer of what's going on, is a lot higher in your, is higher in your part of the country, in the central and eastern corn belt than it is in the western corn belt. And that's a change from what we had seen here on Friday the 21st. We saw Illinois corn bids at 453, a range of 442 to 447. And in Kansas, we were at 444 to 447, and with an average price of 445 or 446. So that's a change from anything you and I have talked about in the last several months, where Kansas, with its western corn belt location, as we were aiming to hit the west coast for so much of our ethanol output, has I wouldn't say it's dried up, but you have more I guess at the plant demand for corn than we do. I don't know if it's the key factor, but I see a lot more dry soil conditions in the western part of the corn belt, and I have wondered if that could be a factor that around those ethanol plants, is they're more concerned about staying current on having adequate supply given what they see around them than maybe we are out here in the west.
Your suggestion was that they bought during the January February time frame and fulfilled their needs.
In Kansas, that's the story that farmers are being told anyway, and I don't want to cause any difference of opinion. but when we did have a run up in the fall for corn prices in the fall of 2024, it seems like a lot of corn moved I guess farmers that are seeking to sell now are being told, said, hey, we're by buyers, and again, that feedlots, ethanol plants, you name it, that their needs are pretty well met up into the summer. Now we'll see how that actually plays out if we get into May, June, July, have any dryness at all. But we're seeing a weak basis out here in the West. That probably the bellwether number would be Garden City, right in the center of our demand area for feedlots and some ethanol plants, and that are the basis, the highest basis, strongest basis in that area. Here late last week was 5 cents over, and that typically has been 50, 60, 70 over. So we certainly have a lot weaker feed grain basis situation than right now in Western Kansas than we've had in several years.
How is your ethanol model in Iowa performing this month?
I need to recalculate that. I think what I've been watching, and to give an indicator of the health in the industry, is the growth in stocks. And we have had here of late the stocks numbers in the U.S. reach all, if not a record high, which I think the record high was back in 2020, approaching that same number. But then again, you know, we've built up stocks and are sitting at the cusp of the travel season. And if you're out here in western Kansas with along I-70, you think it's that travel season's already kind of starting. But gasoline demand is just around the corner. Seasonal gasoline demand. So I think that this very seasonal nature of ethanol stocks probably set, maybe very likely, in preparation for for the demand to come. So we'll see. Production, overall U.S. production, very, very stable. Some minor ups and downs. But again, stocks have built up in anticipation of what could be going on, what may happen. One thing I sure do notice in the ethanol industry trends is that we're seeing exports as a percent of production, above 10%, up to about 13.5% or almost approaching 14%. And again, when you look at it from a historical chart point of view, much more consistent over the last, from 2023, 2024, now into 2025, more consistent ethanol export numbers than we've seen in the past. So that's thought provoking. Really, the only other thing I'd throw in would be, we've been watching the soybean oil export strength and wondering how that plays into or could play into the strength of the soybean complex overall and the production of biofuels. So interesting, again, strong foreign demand for soybean oil because of their bioenergy issues and rules and regulations happening in other countries has now pulled soybean oil out of the U.S. off into those export markets more so than regular. And it's probably a pretty strong competitor with domestic soybean oil production or renewable diesel production. And that's what I was trying to say there. And so we'll see where that goes in coming months, but it's sure something to watch.
We'll check in with you again next month to see how it's going. Thank you.
Thanks, Todd.
Dan O'Brien is with Kansas State University Extension, joins us once a month here on the Closing Market Report to talk about the agricultural energies, which we do each Tuesday. Dan just joins us on this particular Tuesday of the month. You can always hear him again on our website in today's Closing Market Report at willag.org, willag.org. The theme music for our program today is written, performed, produced, and courtesy of Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. Let's check in with Don Day now to take up the agricultural growing regions of the planet. Hello, Don. Thanks for being with us again.
Glad to be here.
I'd like to do something a little different today, given your proximity to the Western Corn Belt and the idea that you work closely with some of those states. Have you been thinking about the long term as it relates to the growing season in the Dakotas and Nebraska?
Yeah, absolutely. There's, for good reason, a lot of eyes and a lot of attention being paid to what the long-term outlook is looking like, because a lot of those areas are pretty dry. And so a lot of folks are concerned about, as we go into the growing season, about what the summer's going to bring.
And what do you see?
Well, it's a season of conflicting signals, which always makes the long-range forecaster have a lot of trepidation. And what do I mean by conflicting signals? Well, there's some model data which is hinting at some dryness this for the remainder of spring and summer in the western and northwest corn belt. Not as dry as spring and summer of 24, but still nonetheless somewhat of a dry signal, at least in the long-range modeling that a lot of people pay attention to, whether it's the European model or the CFS model or the Canadian model. Contradicting some of the model data, though, is what's going on out in the Pacific. We're continuing to see the erosion of La Nina, and we're continuing to see sea surface temperatures out in the tropical Pacific getting warmer. Usually, when you see La Nina fading into spring and the summer and going to a neutral status, that does tend to increase the precipitation chances of the Northwest Corn Belt during the summer. Another area we're watching is, it sounds very far away, but this makes a difference in the summer, is what the sea surface temperatures are doing off the coast of Mexico. And they're cold right now, and they were cold last summer. And that really knocked down the summer precipitation in the Northwest Corn Belt. The thunderstorms just weren't as productive or as widespread. However, as we go into June, July, and August of this year, we're getting some suggestions that those water temperatures are going to warm up. So that's another signal that would indicate that precipitation chances in the Northwest Corn Belt for the rest of spring and summer would be close to the average, the 30-year average, as opposed to a continuation of drought conditions.
And just to clarify the historical relationship between the things you have discussed and what happens in the Northwest Corn Belt is much more likely to move together than what is happening in the Eastern Corn Belt because of those same functions?
Yeah. You know, it's really interesting. The Northwest Corn Belt is right on the border from where there's a lot of Pacific influence and a little bit of Gulf influence. Once you get further east, it's more about, in the summer especially, it's more about what the Gulf is doing and less about the Pacific. So when we get into the Northwest Corn Belt, we kind of have to do a blending of the two different scenarios that we get with the Pacific. And so, you know, what I do see sometimes is the impacts of what's going on in the Pacific sometimes go further east in some years, or stay further west or somewhere in between. And that's kind of where we are this year.
Thank you much, Don. We'll check in with you again next week.
Sounds good.
That's Don Day. He is with Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. He joins us each Tuesday here on the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand, anytime you'd like to listen to us. Again, on that website, you can not only hear the Closing Market Report, but also our Commodity Week program, the Opening Market Report, and a midday update as well with Sue Martin. You'll also find information from the agricultural economist, the crop scientist, and the animal scientist right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You have a good afternoon. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.